everybody, thank you so much for listening to the Cooligans. In this very special episode, we interview Marcelo Balboa, baby!
The legend, USMNT legend, who played in 3 World Cups, scored one of the most insane goals in MLS history.
And almost scored one of the most insane goals in MLS in the World Cup
That's
history.
That's right. He's getting his jersey retired. So we are here to celebrate Marcelo Balboa. He's done too much for the game to not receive his flowers. So all this and more today on the Cooligans. A very special episode today because Alexis is on vacation.
Yeah, I'm not here right
Alexis
now.
Alexis is actually not here.
No, so my God.
We're pre-recording this.
Right now, I'm in a hammock, right? Getting my toes massaged.
Okay. I was like,
that's how it works.
What is the verb that's going to come after toes? It better be the right thing.
Well, also, massage can mean a lot of things to a lot of people.
Anyway, a very special episode today because, yes, Alexis is away, but we recorded an interview with an absolute legend of American soccer, the one and only Marcelo Balboa, who played in 3 World Cups for the U.S. men's national team, was one of the founders of Major League Soccer for the Colorado Rapids. And he is getting his jersey retired this weekend, August 16th, in Denver. Marcelo joined us for a conversation about a lot of things. The history of Major League Soccer.
What it was like that first year.
Exactly. Also, and playing in the 1990, 94, 98 World Cups. Just told the Marcelo Balboa story that I think a lot of our audience may have not heard.
Absolutely. I think what you're going to notice from this interview is that he kind of does it a very different way than a lot of the other former players that we've talked to.
Yeah.
You know, he tends to have a bit more of a positive outlook. He seems like a really nice guy, a good dude to hang out with as well. And I cannot wait for you to hear how much fun we had in this
interview.
Exactly.
And it's very interesting because his center back partner for several years was Alexi Lalas. And these two people couldn't be any more different from each other.
Sometimes you need opposites in order for it to work.
So, it was an absolute honor for us. And we had a great time.
Maybe he had the ball less than Alexi. Maybe
that's right. We're going to have to look back at all the footage in training as well to really figure it all out. But Marcelo's the absolute best. So let's get right to it. Here's our conversation with the Hall of Famer, absolute legend, Marcelo Balboa. Absolutely thrilled about our next guest because there's not often we get absolute legends, pillars of American soccer, the foundation.
I was gonna say founding father, if you will.
I think that's gonna be his new name. I'm sure he's gonna appreciate it. But a man who played in 3 World Cups for the United States. Also one of the most iconic goals in MLS history.
Yeah.
Also some of the most iconic hair in American soccer history.
Back when that was a thing.
Right. It's not as much anymore.
No.
But an absolute legend of the game. And for maybe our younger audience who may not know him, this is going to be an opportunity to allow him to reintroduce himself.
Right.
My name is Marcelo Balboa. Marcelo, what's up, man? How are
Nothing,
you?
Nothing, man. I just came in on my wheelchair. I appreciate it, fellas.
Yeah. With your powdered wig, since we said founding father.
I wish I would have had a beard now, just a white beard. Oh, my Lord. Founding father. No, anything else you want to go with? Father time? What do you want?
El abuelo de fútbol.
Wow. He's starting the senior PGA tour for soccer.
Yes.
No, man. Marcelo, I was saying before we started recording, the first time we met you was maybe a month or two before COVID. This was 2020. Yes. MLS had a 25th anniversary event at this nice hotel in New York. We were there. We had just joined Fubo TV, and it was a whole big thing. We were filming and doing all this stuff. And you were one of the people. They had like a line of different folks from Major League Soccer. Greg Berhalter was there.
Yeah,
David Beckham, Jorge Mas. And I'll be honest. I was like more giddy to talk to you than almost anybody else because you are a person and a voice that, especially in the last like decade for me, has been who I associate with with the sport, whether it's MLS, whether it's the Spanish coverage for Liga MX, everything. You are such an important part of almost on the media side for like in recent history, but you have just done so much for this sport and this country. You're here today because obviously your jersey is going to be retired for the Colorado Rapids, and we're gonna talk about that. But it's great to see you getting your flowers, and I just want to ask you the fact that I'm even talking to you about this, and you're deflecting all these compliments. What was it like to be appreciated like this?
Listen, man, it's only taken 4 years since COVID to get on your show, so you know, Father Time as
right. Well, you passed our test.
I was patient. I was patient, and I'm still alive. Good for me.
Yeah. You stayed alive, and you've done pretty much every job you can in MLS. So,
You know what? I love this damn sport. Since I was a kid, my dad instilled in me what a beautiful sport this is. And anything that makes your heart so happy that you don't have to consider it a job. So, you know, whatever people need, I try to do. I try to fulfill. Do I have bucket lists? Yeah. I never wanted to get into broadcasting, and Mark Cuban and HDNet are the ones that sucked me into broadcasting with that. But you know what? I'm still not done, man. Even though I'm Father Time, I'm still not done. You know, I was thinking about it the other day, and it was hitting me that, you know, I love my TV and I love that, but that bug to be assistant coach, a head coach in MLS is starting to rear its really little tiny head right now. You know what I mean?
Kid's ready to get back on like Ancha.
Yeah, man.
I have to ask, because what's the point of having someone who's had such a storied career, as Christian said, and has done so much? I have to ask about, you mentioned like, you know, what your father introduced you to the sport. You sort of got that bug and it's the greatest job in the world. But you did it at a time when no one knew it could even be a job. You went from the A-League and playing in Liga MX. You also came back and started MLS. What was that? Talk to me about those early years when your jersey is about to be retired, but I want to go back to that beginning when you find out MLS is something that's starting. What's that conversation like?
You know what? It was a simple conversation. I loved playing in León. I never felt such joy. And I mean, this is away from the national team. That pressure of having to be relegation every week, you have to win, you have to lose. If you go up, you go down. But it was simple. I was towards the end of my year before MLS was going to start. Sunil Gulati came out to Mexico and we were talking about coming back to the league. I was telling him, explaining to him that rumor had it and the club is going to sell me to Cruz Azul after that season. And he came out and explained what MLS, you know, we were excited. But what turned my, I guess it would be my mind with that point was he put Phil Anschutz on the phone. And Phil Anschutz started explaining to me his vision of what it was and what it could be. And when he said,
Tam, Gam, stay with me.
No, no. You know, he said a phrase that just kind of threw me for a loop. He said, I'm going to start a team here in Denver. And the only way I'm going to start a team in Denver is if that guy that did the funny overhead kick in the World Cup plays on my team. And it just
called it funny.
It just caught me like, okay, this guy's serious. You know what I mean? Because he didn't have to call me.
Yeah.
But the fact that he wanted me as a defender to be on his team and help him start something, that was the excitement and the challenge that I wanted. You know what I mean? I wanted to come back. I've played in every league possible in the United States, from amateur to before the USL to the APSL, you name it, I played it. And to think that we could start our own professional league in 96 and leave a little bit of a legacy and helping start this league was the challenge that I was really looking for.
Yeah, this is, I can imagine it. I sort of hear it now, right? When newer expansion clubs come into Major League Soccer. Right? I mean, when, you know, we got our, like our first season tickets for NYCFC. So when Orlando City starts as well, and you hear Kaká talking about like, there aren't many opportunities to start a team, to be the first to score a goal, to to create the history for the team. So it's interesting hearing what it was like 30 years ago, what that, because it's almost even more meaningful because it did not exist at all.
Listen, man, we used to dress in trailers. So we trained at the Westminster Rec Center. It was a big field that we had to put our goals, and we had to walk down a hill of 100 yards. But the rec center, where the senior citizens, everybody can go work out, that's where we trained. Next to that, we had two trailers. One was the equipment room. One was the showers in our locker rooms. Okay, that was it. We used to do appearances by Mile High on Federal Boulevard, right next to Old Mile High, at a liquor store. As cars at 5 o'clock were going by, we're waving Colorado Rapid flags, and we have Rapid men out there. We're trying to explain to people what the Rapids are. We did anything and everything we did. We flew commercial. At times, we had to have half the team go at 8 o'clock. The other half had to go at 6 o'clock, so you couldn't get 25 seats on a plane. So you name it, I think we did everything the first 3 years to make sure that we had, because they told us, we have money for 3 years. After that, we'll wait and see what happens. So
wow. That's crazy that you have to... You've got Rapid Man, which is, I think everyone knows, the mascot in MLS history that would scare children the most. You have that guy, and you're getting changed next to old people. Old women are like, who are these new members of the Westminster? I think you could up the price of membership double, and I'd still come. Who's the guy with the ponytail that scored the funny overhead kick in the World Cup?
I love it. Yeah.
So, it's such a different era to think about it, because I think now it's easy for a lot of people to poo-poo, you know, MLS or the differences between MLS and other leagues. But every time we talk to someone who was in the league that first year, they talk about it of like, bro, we had nothing. And now we had something. And the fight for that and the fight to build that, to leave a legacy for the next generation of kids that grew up loving the sport, having the ability to play it here at home. That must have been more than just the money, the lights, and everything else. The ability to be that first must have meant something.
You know, they say that you're a pioneer, but if I remember correctly, the pioneers got shot, right? Back in the oldest. So, you know what? We're the founding fathers, if you want to go with that again.
Yeah.
No, listen, I think we that group between 94 and 96, guys from the national team, I think we all had the same vision. We all wanted to have a league in this country. We wanted to be able to have our grandchildren, our grandchildren's great-grandchildren, everybody have an opportunity to go see or have an opportunity to play. Any young kid who had a dream that wanted to play pro soccer, it was there for him now. And I think that's why a lot of us came back, because we wanted to see the sport succeed in our country. And we've worked, listen, people have no clue the things we went through between 88 and even before that, all the way till we got to 94. The things we did, we lived together, we sacrificed so many things to make sure that when we left the game, and we knew we were not going to get the big money. That was, we obviously knew that. But the important thing is our job was to leave a solid foundation. And then after that, that next generation had to build on top of that. So I think that when you look at the guys, and I'm not talking just the American guys, you want to talk about Valderrama could have played somewhere else. You know what I mean? Yeah. Marco Echeverry could have played somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
And Moreno could have played somewhere else. Cienfuegos could have played somewhere else. You know what I mean? All these guys saw what we saw. They wanted to help us build a legacy. And those guys, you got to give it. I mean, I remember guys telling us that they were making between $80,000 and $100,000 working a real job. They quit that job to make $50,000 to play professional soccer in the United States. That's pretty wow. Damn cool. There's not a lot of guys that would do that. So, I mean, the
wives and girlfriends.
Yeah, but the sacrifices people hey. Make. Exactly. Yeah, you know, I gave up my Porsche. Now I'm driving a Pinto. That's fine. I get it. Yeah. I get it. But a
does
lot
it
of
have
people,
to be that extreme? The wife is like, all right, you maybe not, no Porsche, listen, but Pinto?
Listen, you get to watch the good side of soccer. You didn't get to see what we did in 96. I think you were like 2 years old, if that, you know what I mean?
So. In 96? I wasn't born yet. I'm just very stressed. I have a lot of stress lines. I work with Christian.
Yeah, no, I got it.
Yeah. What I'm interested in your background. You were born in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Me? Yes. Yes. My dad was brought over from Argentina to play in 1966. for the Chicago Mustangs. And my brother wow. and I were both born in Chicago, where my dad eventually told me that he played with my 1990 World Cup coach, Bob Ganser, on the same team in 66 Whoa. And 67, which was kind of cool. So, yeah, wow. I learned
a lot. So Marcelo Balboa is just a Nepo baby. Thank you for clarifying. You
know, take it. Okay.
Didn't earn anything.
Wow, Bronny.
No, man, it was. And you know what's funny? The story how is my dad never told me. My dad told me after Bob Ganser told me, and Bob Ganser told me after he sat me down and told me, you're going to play, you're going to make the 98 World Cup of the 90 World Cup team. You're going to play in a World Cup. And we had another wow. like five. I mean, emotionally, I was in shock. And then he tells me, I've never told you. I go, ask your dad. He goes, we played together in 1966. And I called up my dad after I was done. I'm like, are you kidding me? I go, why didn't you tell me? He goes, you have to earn it yourself. You have to earn the place on the team. I'm like, all right, Dad, go. Wow. I'm like, rock
well,
on.
Well, finally, I feel good about growing up without a father. Oh, my God. They make you earn it. That's not what I want.
I love it. No. But it's interesting. That's a proper Latino dad.
That's a true father figure.
That's it.
But I love that. So your dad from Argentina. And what was the, you know, now these are always the conversations now about like dual nationals and representing that country, this country, whatever. What were the conversations like about representing the U.S. In your household?
It was, there was no real opportunity to represent Argentina. Okay.
Sure.
So my goal as a 14-year-old, because I always played soccer and I was always, me and my brother, I always played up. I never played at my age group. So I always played a year up with my brother. And one, we got laughed at a lot because soccer wasn't big back then. But after the 87 Youth World Cup, where we played in Antofagasta in Chile with the U.S., my dad got a call from somebody in Argentina from the Federation and was saying, you know, hey, is he interested? My dad's like, he already played for the U.S. And back then you couldn't go back and forth. So, yeah. But they found out who I was after I played in the Under-20 World Cup.
That's awesome, though. At least you got a little bit of a shout. Chicago seems like I don't think there were a lot of players on specifically the 94 World Cup team that were from the Chicago area. I know maybe Lalas is from Detroit.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And you've got your Kobe Jones, who's from Cali.
Yeah.
But a big chunk of the players you played with on the 94 team were from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the culture shock of having to deal with a bunch of people from Jersey.
I don't
want to
talk about it.
I'm born and raised in Newark. I'm born and raised in Newark, so I get the vibe.
I don't know. New York with Tony, you tell me. You know what I mean? I got to say this. It was such a good group of guys. It took us a while to mesh. You know, there's no doubt about it. We butted heads East, West Coast because we always had that rivalry, even when we played in the sports festivals. But I think once we all realized what we were able to do or capable of doing as a team, but the accents threw me for a while because, you know, when you're a West Coast boy and you listen to Tony talk, you know what I mean? Back in the old day, Tony was Tony was thick. Not so much now, but
Tony
was
still
thick.
Got it.
Yeah, man, it was.
Tony
spent
how many years now in media, and he's like, "I'm never gonna speak the way you speak to the camera."
Exactly. Hartsy, not so much. Hartsy was more of the comedian, the Jim Carrey. He didn't really have it. Tab didn't really have that deep. That you know what I mean? That but
Tab
Tony,
doesn't speak.
Tony,
you have to have speak to have an accent.
But Tony had a deep, man. Tony had it going on, that's for sure.
I love it. I'm glad I have the opportunity to ask you this, and I feel like my life has just gotten to this point where I can ask you this. The name Marcelo Balboa in the 80s must have been...
With a ponytail. Everyone thought you did porn, right?
In high school, yes.
With the popularity...
With the porn mustache, yes, in high school.
With the popularity of Rocky, I mean, what was your life like? I mean, there must have been either jokes or people doing the accent towards you.
One, no one knew I existed until I grew long hair. Once I grew long hair, all of a sudden, people were like, oh, look at that dude with the long hair. But besides that, listen, I get everywhere I go, it's, yo, Adrian. I get that.
Yeah.
I get the obvious, you know, are you related to Rocky? Do you know Rocky Balboa? And I'm like,
Gotcha.
No, I don't. But yeah, it was, you know, it's still a running joke. I'm 57 going on 58 this weekend. And this, I still to this day, I get people that joke around about Rocky Balboa with me, or Yo Adrian, how's Apollo? You
happy
know what
birthday.
I mean?
So, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Huh? Sure. I just, so. There's like a peak, because for me, my experience was when Tiger Woods crashed his car and was caught in the whole cheating scandal. For like the next 2 years, hey, Tiger, you look like Tiger. It was a very annoying part of my life.
Cracked him over the head with a club.
Yeah. Also, he was on Ambien. Yeah. Well, you get like a multitude of people who kind of look like Tiger Woods.
Right. Yeah.
I just get the Nottingham Forest owner, Evangelinos Marinakis.
That's his doppelganger. Yeah.
Which, you know, at least I got my hairline still, guys. Yeah. No disrespect, Mr. Marinakis.
Be careful what you say.
One of the things that I love about you is that you are, whenever you speak about MLS, you're very positive, right?
Yeah.
And you see the more than, I think a lot of people sometimes complain because they wish it was doing more, right? They wish it was making more of an impact. Yeah. But you always find the positive in that. And I'm going to ask you a question that may shift that.
Okay.
When David Beckham comes into the league, they understand how much of a shift that he could create. They understand how big he could be. And one of the things they offer him is an opportunity to own a club.
Yeah.
Lionel Messi comes in. They understand how significant this will be to the league. They give him an opportunity to potentially own a club, allegedly, right? We don't know that for sure.
Yeah, no, it's in his deal.
Or to be a part of Miami, right?
Part of Miami, right. It's a part of a club ownership. Yeah. When y'all came in this league, y'all created that first major shift. Y'all were the first reason that built this league. How come y'all didn't get the chance to own a club or at least be potentially part of a club?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think people didn't think there would be 30 franchises eventually, but
right.
I think, listen, there's just certain things that happen in certain leagues, you know what I mean? And when a guy like David Beckham comes in, you have to make the offer attractive to him. He's a business guy. He's a smart guy. He didn't say, I want part of LA. I want a franchise. And I think he knew he was going to go to Miami. So I get it. Same with Messi. I get that kind of stuff. But listen, at the end of the day, we just want to see soccer grow. We just want people to stop comparing oranges and apples and apples and oranges, because we can't compare. I was having a conversation today with somebody, and he was comparing 100 years of the EPL to 30 years of MLS. And I'm sitting there going, how do you compare? We still got 70 years to go to catch up to the, you know what I mean? So I'm a firm believer that, listen, we're going to take some bumps here and there. But at the end of the day, you know what? When you can drag in Thierry Henry, when you can drag in David Beckham, when you can drag in Suarez, Messi, DePaul, and we can keep going down the list of players, that means we've got something that people are excited about. They see the future. They see what this league could be. And I think everybody wants to be a part of it. So little by little, you'll see hopefully some American guys, you know, get an opportunity to own a franchise. But I think right now that you have to do anything you can to make sure that those big names are associated with MLS. Because if Messi's going to own a team, Messi wants to win. David Beckham wants to win. So imagine those two putting their heads together and bringing in players. You know what I mean?
It feels
like the founding fathers, if you will, not just the Americans, but the Valderramas, whoever.
Yeah.
The guys who made the decision to take less money or to leave other leagues to come to help build MLS should be given something.
What a good gift.
Maybe it's a very small percentage of the league.
You just gave me an idea. I should ask Kroenke to give me a portion to be a part owner.
Yeah, I mean, this is why.
Hold on. First of all,
we. Well, I have to become owner first in order to give some wealth back.
Right.
You know
hey,
I mean?
I want you to get your beak wet.
Yeah,
look, I'm going to talk like Tony.
Exactly.
You get your beak wet first.
Okay. We'll have Tony Miola negotiate the whole thing.
Tony, just walk in with his bat. I think they'll understand.
his bat and go. And
Tab,
go.
Stand behind him and don't say anything. You're the muscle.
That's his move.
Lord, he reminds me that. What was that comedian with the smoke and Italian.
Andrew, Andrew Dice Clay.
Yes.
Andrew Dice Clay.
That's Tony.
Yeah. That's Tony. Tony Dice Clay.
I mean, Tony should really, at least for a Halloween, dress up as Andrew Dice Clay. You wouldn't be able to tell him apart.
I don't think you could get Tony to celebrate Halloween, to be involved in Halloween. He seems like a guy who's like, no, you don't understand. I'm wearing a blue shirt today. I would never do that. That's my Halloween costume. I'm crazy Tony.
It is, at the very least, like MLS, in the last, you know, easily like 7-8 years.
Yeah.
I mean, and we saw it with the Club World Cup. We're watching like Leagues Cup. Where it's feeling like from 1 to 11 on a starting lineup, it's the comparison. You can't compare it to an EPL team. But it used to be maybe there might be one guy that could play in Europe. And now it's feeling like maybe that's like 5 or 6. And you have to like appreciate that to some degree. Even as a fan and a viewer, you're like, okay, the product is improving, right? Because I'll ask you, when you were first playing in MLS, what was, you know, I always remember the comments and quotes from like Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He was very vocal about, he's like playing, he was like, they wouldn't pass me the ball where I wanted. Yeah. He wouldn't necessarily trust his teammates. Yeah. But what was the level like for you when you're playing with some of your teammates, and you don't have to give any names, but what were you like, bro, I know this is MLS and we just started, but this is not good enough. Or like, how frustrated were
you? Why are you wearing roller skates? You know?
What was that feeling like for you joining the league?
You know what? It was, and it wasn't the players. And I'll be honest with you, because remember the first day I walked into practice, and I left Mexico where it's very technical. You play every little 1-2s, you pass and move. And I remember coming to the first practice and the coach sets up the half the field where we're on our half of the field and we're playing out of the back. Well, I'm not playing as a center back. I'm playing as a double pivot with Trichu. Okay. So the idea was ball to the keeper, center back out wide, back to the keeper, back this side, and then a long ball. I'm not lying. Hit it as far as you can to our forward. And my job with Trichu was to run as fast as we could when the ball was in the air. Trichu's job was to run past the forward, so we flicked it. My job was to drop underneath the forward for the long ball, so if it played down, I can control it. I'm sorry. Hello? That's not what I signed up
for. Yeah, why am I running this much?
That's not what I signed up for, you know what I mean? I just came from playing in a World Cup. I was at Olympiacos for a while. They played soccer. Then I went to Leon. We played soccer. And now we went back to long. Every time we got it, it was go, go. And I was just like, my Lord. I go, I didn't sign up for this. Because listen, we had Scott Benedetti. You had Sean Bartlett, who played on the South African national. Yeah. You had Gene Harbour. We had Chris Henderson. We had Dennis Hamlet. We had guys that could play. We had guys that, and every team had guys that can play, but every coach wanted to instill a different system. And my God, did we pick the wrong coach for that first team? Holy crud, man. I think that was the year I was most injured because I don't think I ever jogged. I sprint there. I got used to sprinting to the bathroom and coming back and go. Everything was high speed. It drove me crazy, man. It was just, I'm like, where's the pause? Where's the little 1-2, the little flicks? They're over there with the LA Galaxy. You guys need to play like this. So it was. Wow. It was rough, man. It was rough.
That sounds intense.
It was.
For a defender to be like, and run your heart out.
But it says something, and I love that distinction because people always criticize the players. And like, oh, MLS, I don't like watching it. The players, the quality, blah, blah, blah. And maybe it's not simply the quality. Maybe it is the coaching. Maybe it is tactics. Maybe it is the style of play that really makes the difference.
But you guys have seen soccer. You've seen it grow here. You can't tell me that the soccer is bad. You can't play at 90 degrees and it's 80% humidity. I get that. But you can't say the soccer hasn't grown in the last 10 years. That's not gotten better. Each team, we saw last night, Columbus plays football, man. They play. They knock and they run and they go. You know what I mean? Watch the Galaxy last year. They played football. Miami. There are teams that are playing. So I have a hard time. Like I said, for me, it's very difficult when I hear people comparing leagues right now. If you want to compare us to Liga MX, but even Liga MX has 40 years on us. You know what I mean? I think we're doing damn well for where we're at 30 years into a league.
I want to talk about the place the league has, because when in 96, when you first come in, you're probably thinking like, yo, wouldn't it be crazy if this league developed the next level of players, right? When you started, 3 years was the promise. Imagine if it got to 10 or 15, we could develop the next players that gets into the World Cup. When you were part of those teams that you weren't guaranteed to qualify for the World Cup. Yep. It wasn't a shoe-in like it almost feels like it is now outside of 2018. Now it feels like U.S. men's national team players are all mostly playing in Europe.
Yep.
What do you think that says to MLS now? What is MLS's place when it comes to the U.S. men's national team?
You know what? I think it's simple. It is a global league now. There are scouts coming from, I get calls from South America, from Mexico, asking about players in MLS. So you know what? The league right now is a place to develop these young players, MLS Next Pro, MLS Academy, and our job is to do business. Can we sell them $5 to $10 million? Trusty got sold to Arsenal. Arsenal sold him somewhere else. That's what it is right now. It's given an opportunity for these young kids to develop and to play a few years. Look at Arsene. Arsene is the next kid who's going to be gone. And if it wasn't for MLS, where would he be? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So for me, it's turned out to be this, and I know it's supposed to be a league for American players, but we have to evolve. We have to keep evolving. And it's a league that's developing players. It's that trampoline league. You come here, you play 3 or 4 good years, Almiron, gone. 2 years, 3 years, gone. Sold him to Newcastle. That's what it's about now. And I think we're finally catching up to that place where everybody in the world says, okay, let's go look at MLS players. You know what I mean? Look at Farfan. Just got sold to Tigres. Thanks for coming. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think a lot of guys are coming now to MLS, younger players, because they see how many eyeballs are on this league.
Yeah. The owners are now realizing there is a real business.
Yeah. And my eyeballs got money.
So you're one of the few players that played in that 94 World Cup and played at a World Cup stateside for your country. Can the 2026 World Cup is finally the next time there's going to be a World Cup in a men's World Cup in the United States? What we know the impact from 94 created MLS and we are where we are today because of that 94 World Cup. Mm-hmm. But 2026 comes through another World Cup here. What do you think the impact might be after that 2026 World Cup? Is there anything, could it even be similar to what happened after the 94 World Cup?
No, you can't compare 94 to what's going on now. 94 was the first time the U.S. was ever going to host the World Cup. This was the no expectations. If you go back to 94, when you looked at our group, no one really gave us a chance of getting out of the Colombia group with Switzerland, Romania. No one ever gave us a chance. So I think that World Cup for us was, one, we got to prove that we can host the biggest tournament in the world. Number two, we have to get out of the group. We will do anything and everything. And we made it very clear to each other that we will run, we will fight, we will scratch, we will do everything we can to make sure we get the results. And we knew we had our game plan. We thought, okay, we can beat a Switzerland. You know, we're probably going to lose to Colombia. Let's be honest. We played them 5 times. We lost 5 times. And then we would take our chances with Romania. We can maybe get a tie. There's our 4 points. We're through. So I think that when we got the first point, that kind of gave us a high. We were nervous about Colombia, but I can tell you this. When we walked out of the locker room, it wasn't the same Colombia, and we had no clue what was going on back home. We didn't know any of that stuff. But to be honest with you, we all sat there, and usually Colombia, when they're out there, vamos, cago, vamos, con todo, vamos, muchachos, vamos, they're screaming and yelling at each other. It was very quiet. It was just a few little guys saying something, and we just, you know, you walk on the field, and you just get that feeling that today could be our day. And I saw Formula One, and I think Brad Pitt described it, that everything goes silent. Everything's quiet and you just start going faster and you're in this mood. And I think that's kind of what happened to us. We kind of got in that groove. We were playing, we were blocking, everything was going our way. So now all of a sudden we shocked everybody because we beat the number one team in South America. We're into the second round of the World Cup. So I think that opened up a lot of people's eyes. This World Cup depends on this next generation. What they do in this World Cup is going to leave a bigger legacy or it's going to leave a big disappointment. Because at this point right now, they're not playing great, but it's okay. You don't have to play great right now. You have to play great at the World Cup. You got to show up and you've got to play your best soccer at that point. And I think this team has the capability. They've got players that we've never had playing in teams that we've never seen in my generation, of playing at AC Milan and playing at Chelsea and placing at Juventus and Dortmund and all these places. So I think that the expectations are high, because for me, I will always back this team and I want to see this team do well. But anything short of a quarterfinal to me with this group of players, I don't think is successful for us in this World Cup, especially when we got out of the group in 94 and we weren't supposed to get out of the group. So I think the expectations are very high. Now let's hope they can live up to it. If they can live up to it, this could take soccer in this country to another level.
Right. And that's the whole point, right, of not having that missed opportunity, yep. right? You talk about the impact that the 94 World Cup had. Maybe you could share with us what that felt like, the difference between the day before the World Cup and the day after the World Cup for your life. Like, how did so many more people knew who you were now, right?
Yeah, the problem with me is I'll be honest, I was in selfish mode, okay? Because remember, I tore my ACL 8 months before the World Cup. So I didn't know if I was going to be on the World Cup team. So I kind of got, I went through depression. I went through everything. And Fernando Clavijo, God rest his soul, he got me out of it. He came every day to my apartment. He grabbed me out of bed, took me to practice. He brought me back until I got out of that. It took me like 2 weeks to get out of that. I may not make it. And so it was very different for me than it was for this group, because they were doing their thing. And you could see the pressure was building, but I was more worried about making the World Cup team. And I had some great friends who helped me through it, you know, be it Tony, be it all those guys. Rudy Rudowski was a trainer. But I can tell you who my biggest motivation was, were the three assistant coaches. When I overheard them one day when I was working out, talking to Bohr about getting rid of me. They don't think I should be here. He's not going to make it back in time. And if he does, he's not going to be an impact player. We need to get rid of him now, cut him loose. We need to find other center backs to get us through this. And when I heard that, man, it broke my heart that three out of the four coaches would give up on me. After everything I've gone through, everything I've done, I've played every minute of every game in 91 and 92. So that fueled my fire even more to get back. And once I got back, I can tell you this, it was, we were ready, man. I don't think any national team will be as ready as we were, training together, eating together, watching soccer together, doing events, watching Lexi sing at the Hennessy's pub in Manhattan. I think it was in St. Louis Obispo. I don't know where it was, in Mission Viejo mm-hmm. area. So it was I think the best thing U.S. soccer
did. You had to go through that, actually.
Yeah, no, it's all good, man. No, listen. It's you know what it is.
Actually, four out of the four assistant coaches were like, we gotta stop putting microphones in front of Alexi.
Listen, if it wasn't for Bora, I wouldn't have been on that World Cup team. I can tell you. If there was another coach, I might have been gone. But Bora took a chance, man. Bora took a chance that I was gonna make it back.
You got back very quickly from an ACL.
I got back
tear.
In 6 months. I mean, back then it was unheard of.
Back then.
Yeah. So I just want to get some clarity. There must have been people being like, do not do this. Yeah. You are not ready, right?
They don't know me. People don't know that side of me. Okay. I would wake up and I saw a video of Paul Gascoigne doing exercise after he tore his ACL. I was riding my bike around the grass, around the field, because it put more resistance on your leg. I would go and do therapy with Rudy. I would go to the mountains in the afternoon and ride up in the mountains on a bike. I wouldn't do weights. I would do a bike. I was back in 6 months, but they were draining my knee probably once a week from the fourth month on to the sixth month, because I was working so hard. I wasn't stressing out the ACL, but there was a lot of fluid being built up. So they were taking out a little bit of fluid, we'll say, from my knee. But I was back in 6 months, and Bohr didn't let me play until 8 months. So it wouldn't let me play.
People now are just starting to come back from ACLs. Yeah. 30 years later, are starting to come back 8 months. Yeah. You did this when they were like, I don't know, maybe we put horse muscles in them? You know, like, they didn't know back then.
It's the mind, buddy. It's the power
Doctors
of the mind,
Doctors were smoking
bro.
Cigarettes back then, dude.
I did so much reading back then to figure out how I could get back quicker. I was not going to... Listen, I was heartbroken. I was in the showers crying at Foothills College when I tore my ACL against Iceland. I thought my life, my career, everything was just gone for me. And you know, when you have good teammates, Giannis, Mahalish, Tony, always backed me. And at the end of the day, man, it's your body will do what you want it to do as long as you're a good, positive thinker and you know things are going to recover. And I tried to stay as positive as I could. After the, I'm not going to lie, the first 4 weeks, I was miserable, man. No one wanted to be around me. I was that depressed. And yeah. I said, if it wasn't for Fernando, man, I probably wouldn't have made that World Cup team.
What's the selfish mode you talked about? What happened after World Cup?
After World Cup, it was awesome. Listen, I'll tell you this. I'll just leave it at this. We used to go to Disneyland and I have to stand in line. After the World Cup, we walked into the park and all of a sudden everybody knew who we were. So we had to get escorts from ride to ride to ride. Right after the 94 World Cup. So it was
Marcelo
it was
had the fast pass before the fast pass existed.
Bro, exactly. You were so ahead of your time, dude.
So life was different, man. It was hard to get used to because you're used to being able to walk around places. And, you know, you can do whatever you want. Listen, when I went to Leon, I went shopping with my wife, okay? Just to the grocery store. I'm thinking, I'm good. We walked in, and within 10 minutes, we had to have security guards come grab us because they mobbed us for autographs. We couldn't get through. There was about maybe 50 to 100 people around us. They literally had to come get the security guards and take us out. And the lady says before we left, just send us your order and we'll send it to your house. I'm like, thank you.
Hilarious.
So yeah.
He had Instacart before Instacart existed. God, Marcelo.
Speaking of pioneers, everything. Dog. You know, imagine if you nailed that bicycle kick against Colombia. How different
would your life have been? Maybe I would have got a Harley dealership sponsor. What? People keep saying, listen, Real Madrid wasn't going to come chasing me because I scored a bicycle.
I don't know, bro.
You don't know.
I mean, so close. I mean, even when you watch the highlight back, it looks like it goes in, right?
I just realized it didn't go in again. I thought for a while it had gone in.
But that, you know, and that was a prelude to the one that you scored in for the Rapids in MLS. But that was honestly it is a miss. But what I'd love to hear from you because the highlight captures what looks like you celebrating, but it's actually you're frustrated, you're upset, you're pissed. Yeah. But then Tony, he's like this.
He's like
gloves,
giggling to
he's
himself.
He's giggling. He's like, everybody wanted that moment for the team, for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm more pissed at Tab because he hit a little too far behind me. If he would have hit it a little bit further front, I might have scored. But no, you know what? That ball was supposed to, if you watch the video, me and Lexi are starting to go towards the middle, towards the penalty spot. And when Tab hits it, you know, it was just, listen, as a kid, I saw Pele do a bicycle kick. I'm doing a bicycle kick. Listen, I've been lucky enough. I scored one with the under-20s against Canada. I scored one against Trinidad, which was the easiest one. It just kind of bounced up. And then, but this one was just instinct. It came, I saw it, and I hit it so pure that I didn't feel it come off my foot. That's how, and I don't hit a lot of balls like that, but I hit it so pure I didn't feel it. And when I turned around, I saw it coming off the goal. I was like, I kind of looked for a minute to see it was in. Then I see it hit the publicity board. And that's where you see me get up pissed off more than anything. Yeah, yeah. Because, yeah, listen, you don't get this. I think, one, people were in shock that it was an American. And number two, that was a center back doing a bicycle kick.
Yeah,
that's what I get all the time. He goes, what did you learn to do that? You're a center back. I'm like, I know. Stu, my dad, listen, here's the rule. My dad, when I was in college and before I got to college, said, if you're going to be a center back, you've got to be able to do things different. You've got to be able to do things that make you stick out. That means you've got to be able to be good in the air. So I worked on jumping. I worked on hitting balls from long distance. So I did all these things. And the bicycle kick was just something that was, mom's pissed because I broke a few lamps in the house, but that's okay. But it's just something that as a kid, it just fascinated me. Something different, something a lot of people couldn't do. And there was, I just missed one of the best misses ever, right? That's what they tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, it's in my heart, it went in, you know?
Sure.
At least I remember that one. I don't remember the Columbus one, but I remember that one.
Nice. And I do want to wind down a little bit, but the you are in the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame as well, and then you're getting your jersey retired by the Colorado Rapids. And also, historically, Colorado Rapids, great jerseys in general. I mean, you know what I mean? You're getting your number retired, but like you, especially the
OG.
That 96, you looked awesome. The hair, the
green and white and black.
The baggy shirts. Like yeah.
Do you miss the baggy shirt era?
I do. We went, but when I was done playing, we went to the Kappa skin tight jerseys. Not a fan. I like a little baggy, a little drip, you know what I mean, to it. Just like the shorts. I like the shorts. Now they're going back to the old longer shorts, which is nice. I like the socks over the knees. I played in Mexico. I learned socks over the knees to keep the knees warm. Yeah. I got it all. But all right. I do. I'm a fan of green. So the Rapids bringing back the green was big time.
And they're retiring the number 17. And so, I mean, you're getting celebrated by U.S. soccer and being in the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame and now getting your number retired by the club, which is a fairly rare thing. Yeah. I mean, in soccer, this is not a thing that regularly happens. The numbers are just most fans and most cultures are just like the numbers just passed on.
Yeah.
But nobody will be wearing the number 17. So what does that feel like for you to get honored by the club in this way?
I feel like I was smart. I didn't pick a prime number that they could retire like a 10 or a 9. You know, I mean, I feel pretty good about that.
Smart move. Thinking ahead.
You know what? I don't know. You know what? I've been asked this question a few times and I'm a little lost right now. You know what I mean? Because when I played soccer, I played it because I love it. And I still love it now. I'm 50, going on 58, and I still play it. I tore my shoulder up, and I'm still playing. So, you know, it's hard for me because it's not an individual sport. The only reason I've been so successful is because of the wonderful players. Listen, I've had Tony behind me for years. I had Lexi to the side of me. I've had John Hart, Tab Ramos. I mean, I've had wonderful teammates in León with Galgo and Tita. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's hard for me to understand my number being retired when I've had so many people in my life that have been teammates that have and have done so much to make, like, the first goal that the Rapids scored. Everybody says, oh, Marcelo scored. Do you guys even remember who the first assist was from? I ask everybody. No one does. But if that guy doesn't, Gene Harbor doesn't do what he does, I don't score that first goal. I'm in a position where they play it nice and easy in front of me, all I have to do is tap it in the corner. So, I have a hard time understanding the individual side of it when this is a team sport. So, I mean, my head's wrapping around it, but, I mean, it's an honor and a half that they even thought about doing this. But there's so many people that I would have to thank for having my number retired because of all my teammates that have helped me get to the positions I've been. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, well, you'll have the opportunity to thank all those people on Saturday, August 16th, in the game against Atlanta United, where they'll be retiring your jersey number. So, Marcelo, we can go on for hours. You are incredible.
Could talk for the next 3 hours.
I know you're saying it's difficult to wrap your head around this stuff, but like I said up top, you are a foundational a pillar of this sport in this country. You have given us incredible moments that people still talk about today and still have a huge impact. I'm sure people see you all the time, want to take a photo.
The sport wouldn't be in this country where it is today if it wasn't for you.
Yeah, and then the one thing I want to add is, and this will be the last question, is, you know, your positivity, your optimism. I love it because our show is called The Cooligans, right? Not The Hooligans. Yeah. We're trying to have a much more positive.
Try to have a good time.
Try to have a good time around this sport. And one big thing, and I've seen you talk about it on some other shows, is the ex-player who criticizes the current players. Yeah. This is a thing you're really not a fan of. And for us, especially comedians, it's a little bit of fodder. I'm like, oh, hear what he said, and we get the mochinche, and we have a little fun with it. But you're not a fan of it. Why is that?
It's not that I'm not a fan of it. Listen, I understand social media, and I know people like their clicks and likes. The more people you get, the more sponsors. I get all that stuff. But you know, we're at a point in our sport where we're trying to help it grow. Tell me, what good does it do beating up Christian Pulisic? Tell me, what good does it do beating up our own team? We should be encouraging and pushing this team. So they have our, they need to walk out on the field and they need to know that they have our full support. In life, it's very easy to find negative things. Negative things come out like that. And that's why I have a hard time with it, because you know what? There are guys out there. Tell me one guy that understands what Christian Pulisic's going through right now. Tell me one guy that has played in Europe, had his one Champions League, and has played as many games as he has. And please don't tell me Landon Donovan, because Landon has not. If you're telling me Clint Dempsey's telling me I understand how tired he is, and this, I get it. He played a lot of games for Fulham. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think that we need to beat up our own guys. I think we need to support them. We need to push them. Because, listen, we're not going to get another opportunity like this. This is the second time we're getting the World Cup. This is it. This needs to be the moment we make a big splash. We shouldn't have Christian Pulisic defending himself because people are beating him up and his dad's having to get up, jump on. You know what I mean? They need to feel our full support. When you walk on that field, when Argentina walks on that field, what does that stadium do? When Brazil walks out in that stadium, what do? Are they negative? Hell no. They're behind their team 100%. And that's something, listen, I've been taught a long time ago, having an Argentine dad, you represent your country, you represent as best as you can, but you're going to have good days and bad days. It doesn't mean you should be get beat up all the time. So I'm just a firm believer that we should be behind these guys 100%. And that we should be encouraging them. You know what? You need a break? Great. Take it now, because there's no break starting September till next World Cup. There's no break. It's time to go. We got to get it done. So we're not going to get we're not going to get this stage again in 2026.
I mean,
well said.
Well said. Yeah.
I mean, we also need to get like views and listen. So is there anyone you want to talk shit about?
You know what? You do. I will be the positive side. You go. I'll throw the other side of the spectrum. All right.
Exactly.
I'm only joking.
As much as I don't want, you know, Pulisic's dad getting involved in any of these beefs, it's pretty hilarious and it makes it for great entertainment. So.
I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But here's my philosophy. I don't have to blow your candle out to make mine look brighter. And that's what I don't like. True. That's what I don't like. We don't need to blow somebody like that, to blow their flame out, so then everybody sees my light. You know what I mean? Everybody has a light. Sometimes it's dim, sometimes it's bright. But we don't want to blow the light out, because that to me is showing that we don't care about our players, our people, or anything in life. So like I said, for me, it's no matter what happens, win or lose, I've got their back. I've played it. I know what it's like playing their walk up at home. I know what it's like playing 30, 40, 50 games, but I don't know what Christian's going through. I don't know, understand his brain or his body. So if he's telling us he needs a break, you know what? Rock on, son. Go take your vacation. But please, when you come back, you better be ready to play. There's no more excuses. And if he doesn't do it then we can have another discussion.
I want to ask one last question and we can leave you on this.
You're good, man. You're good.
You're about to get your jersey retired. You know, the Hall of Fame, the whole nine. When somebody, whether it's a former player or former teammate of yours, or it's someone who watched you on TV and was a big fan, when they walk by your retired jersey, what do you want them to think of about you first? Like, what's the first thing that pops in their mind?
I want them to know, I want them to realize how much I love my team. I want them to know that when I stepped on the field, that I gave 100%. I've taken injections. I've played through broken bones. In my foot, I want them to realize that every time I put on that green, it means something to me. Even now, it means something, be it Leon or be it the Rapids. I want them to realize how much I love my team and how much I love my sport. That's what I want them to know. And that, because they're never going to know what kind of person I am, because they're a fan and they don't get to interact all the time with me. You know what I mean? The important things for me is I'm a good father. I'm a good person. I try to be positive. But the fan, I want them to know how much I respected them and appreciated them. But I want them to know that when I stepped on the green, on that field with that green jersey, I gave everything I had for them.
I love that.
It's beautiful.
I also, when you said injections, some fans are going to be like, Marcelo got a BBL?
Yeah, lip filler?
I got a toe filler. I got a toe filler.
You're ahead of the curve.
Yeah. I gotcha. You know?
Buddy, there's a place on the internet for that too.
Marcelo Balboa,
absolute legend,
absolute honor for us. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'm so excited for your flowers to be given to you on the 16th in Colorado. It's just a really, really cool thing, and yeah, honored again as two Latino kids who again grew up watching you. It's just like a really, really dope experience for us to have you on our show.
Well, so let me say this. I appreciate it. And listen, we all have our job in sports. We are on the field. You guys are off the field. But you guys do an awesome job too, promoting the sport and calling people out when they need to be called out. So we, as former athletes and as fans, appreciate what you guys do.
Oh, that means the world.
That means the world. Thank you so much, Marcelo. I appreciate it. All right. Take care, man.
Thank you again, Marcelo. What a fun, enlightening interview.
Exactly. It's also a positivity that we're not used to from our former players.
No, not at all. There's usually, we bring them on here to throw a couple Molotov cocktails. And this guy, not at all.
And they, a lot of them do the back in my day. And he still does the back in my day, but he's like, I'm not going to put that on this current generation. Yeah, I'm going to uplift and support. And doesn't he talk like a Gen Z,
100%.
Therapy speak?
He had all the Gen Z items. He had an iPad back in the day in 94. He had Instacart.
The best. So, yeah, this is really, really dope. We enjoy it. I know our audience did as well. Marcelo is really, really dope. So thank you to Marcelo and the Rapids for making that happen. And if you are in the Colorado area, go to his jersey retirement on the 16th.
Deserves it, man.
Yeah, without a doubt. So
the man was waving flags, getting changed with old people. He deserves this.
The commitment to the crest is unmatched. So as always, make sure you subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button if you haven't yet. Make sure you follow us on all socials, Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, at Soccer Cooligans, soccercooligans.com on Blue Sky. All the action's happening over on Blue Sky. Everybody's leaving that web. Did you see that? That the assessment is that Twitter, they're saying it is like 72% bots.
That makes a lot of sense.
That it's just, you're not, it's the dead internet theory that it's not actual people. There's actual people on Blue Sky. So get over there because we're over there. So join us on Blue Sky. All right. Let's wrap up there. We'll be back on Thursday with a brand new episode. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And we'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Peace.
Ooh, I just ordered another drink from my toes.